Hi, I'm Justin Lokitz, and this is the Design Chip Podcast, your weekly design guide packed with actionable insights, expert interviews, and bold ideas to help designers at every level lead with clarity, influence change, and shape what's next. In this episode, I chatted with my good friend Maya Elise Joseph-Kotchner, an amazing design leader and founder, about her journey from Google, where she ran the storied Area 120 Accelerator, to founding her own design agency, Velocity Ave. Keep listening to learn how Maya turned a layoff into a launchpad, redefining design leadership, embracing uncertainty, and building a high-velocity agency for the AI era. And remember to subscribe to the show and the Design Chip newsletter if you enjoyed this episode. Thanks. Hey, welcome everyone to Design Shift. As always, I am truly excited about our guests, and especially today, I'm speaking with Maya Elise Joseph-Kotchner. She is truly a master at building scrappy, high-impact teams that turn uncertainty into opportunity, which is something I think we all love. At Google's Area 120, Maya scaled a zero-budget research function into a foundational pillar of the incubator, shaping over 58 products and influencing the investment strategy at Google, which is big. At Gannett, which is a giant media company, she bridged the gap between research and action across major news outlets, sparking innovation through grassroots initiatives like Product Jam. And now, with her own amazing research, design, and strategy agency, Velocity Ave, Maya's helping to shape ideas into kick-ass products for her clients. And really, honestly, having spoken with Maya before, I don't think there's anything she can't design or can't do. So welcome, Maya, to the Design Shift podcast, newsletter, and all the rest.
Thank you, Justin. Can you introduce me always?
I'll do my best. Yeah, usually it's like a few times, and then I rewrite it, and I'm like, I'm not sure I would say it that way. Let's say it this way. This is the way I write, and here's the way I talk. So here we are.
Very gracious. Very, very gracious.
Thank you. Thank you. And kind of you to be here. So
I'm really excited to be here.
Let me just kick it right off and with a little bit of a warm up. You know, I know you're now, you've got your agency, Velocity Ave, and I just mentioned in the intro, you haven't always been a startup agency founder. Just before this, and in fact, last time I spoke with you for the Everything is a Prototype podcast, you were working at Google, and so this is big tech. You had massive resources, global impact, probably an intense culture, and I think probably even more so towards the end of your tenure there. Tell me a little bit about your past role, and even past roles, if you like, and, you know, what did those days look like? Because I'd like to also get to what does today look like. So what did it used to look like in your past roles in big tech?
Yeah, a normal day in big tech was 14 meetings. Yeah. It was, you know, back-to-back meetings, supporting my team, planning, facilitating strategic workshops with the leadership team, advocating for research and design, up-leveling the work of my team, meeting with cross-PA leaders to connect the dots between organizations, because Area 120, as you mentioned in the intro, was an incubator. And at the end of the day, our goal was to build products and graduate them into core Google product areas. So to do that, we had to really understand other product areas. So that was a normal day. I think a big day was deciding with the partners, evaluating either pitches or determining whether one of the 58 products should get more funding. It was making decisions about the investments and our strategy and vision. So where were we going? And as you said, it shifted so much in 2022. We had a order, or there's probably a better word, but that Sundar really was pushing all of Google in the fall of 2022 to focus exclusively on AI. So our organization went through a pivot of its own, where every product we invested in, every product that was within our organization had to be leveraging AI in some way. And my team of research and design really shepherded that transition and did a lot of the groundwork in helping our teams understand the landscape of AI at that moment in time, and helping our partners also get up to speed, because not everybody was super familiar with AI or an expert in AI. So yeah, so that was a normal day, a big day, had minimal differences, honestly, because there's so many systems, and I think that's something we'll get more into later, that dictate your work and how you lead when you're within corporate. And it's something that when you're in it, I think you almost don't see it. You almost don't realize how you're not making personal decisions, because there's such this strong ethos and such this strong mission that defines your principles and values. And this has been a big realization being on the outside that we'll talk more about later.
That's already big. Even that is profound. The idea that you don't make decisions, right? I heard that, and I think you are making some decisions, and
you make decisions. Yes, on some level, you're making
and
decisions.
And you're being guided by the mission, by the culture that is at that place. That is really interesting, and it's also very, in my mind, very meta to this AI conversation. Right here, you were out there doing research on AI. This is 2022, so it's crazy that it was really, these LLMs were just coming up then, just like inching their way in. Here you were making decisions without making decisions, because they were sort of being made for you via culture and mission, vision, strategy, whatever. Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, and of course you're making decisions, right? But there are you need to be thinking about the business, and you need to be aligning to the mission and the vision and the OKRs. And so there is room to define your team's values and principles, but they have to make sense. They have to be in concert with the bigger picture. And I mean, I felt that I had tons of autonomy. That was never in question. But when I left, I realized that there was a lot that was already defined, and I had to redefine some of these things for myself on the outside that were big.
Yeah. Let's just talk about that. You left at the same time. I'm not sure you left on your own accord. Maybe as a little bit of both.
No, I did not. Right. Yeah. I used the word left. It was not.
Yeah. Okay.
My
Let's. We'll get there. So let's just talk about that. You were asked to leave, right? Or the company was changing, as big companies do.
I was one of the 12,000 in January of 2023, and it was, so the decision wasn't mine. I was super happy. I loved my team. I loved my role. I loved my organization. There had been signals that there was going to be a big layoff. As I said, in September 2022, that focus on AI ended up with a reduction in force, a RIF. And it was part of the decisions that were made around that RIF. And so the writing was on the wall, but because I really was in love with my role and my team, I wasn't honest about the impending risks. And the day before the layoff, I always love telling this story, I facilitated a workshop for our investment partners that was about Gen AI. And we had, it was, I think it was 2 hours, and we had a bunch of exercises. And the one exercise we did not get to was writing a eulogy for our organization.
Wow. Yeah. With the one that you really needed at that point.
It was ironic and also in retrospect comical. But only one person in the room knew that the layoff was coming. And but I think that gives you a sense that there was an unconscious awareness. I knew this was coming, but I wasn't totally prepared.
I totally get it. And I think I spoke with you right before then, and then we sort of chatted it over LinkedIn or whatever, and probably email, maybe even over a Zoom or something afterwards. And I know that it was, I'll just put it out, I think it was a bit devastating to you at that point. And you were also there forced to make some decisions. And one of those decisions I feel like you made, and I'd love to talk about that one now, is you made this decision not to go back into tech in the same way, and you started Velocity App. What was that decision-making process like, to, from going from this employee leader, really a leader for this incredible group at Google, where you loved your work and you loved your team, to a place where you're like, I'm going to build my own. I'm going to build my own team and build something I love.
Yeah, there were a lot of components of that decision. I did parallel path for about 3 or 4 months where I was applying to full-time roles and building the agency at the same time. So I was part-time building the agency and then I was interviewing. And I did that so that I could really make an assessment. And so there were a few dimensions of this. One is, in Area 120, the diversity of work was incredible. I was always learning about new markets and verticals, and I wanted that to, ideally, I wanted that to continue being a part of my career. And so as I was applying to these roles that were in-house, they all felt a little bit too focused, and maybe, limiting in some way to my curiosity and aspiration to continue learning. The other thing was I started to realize that we were entering this time, and corporate culture was changing. And it made me really think about what security means and realize that there wasn't necessarily security in a full-time position. And I have the privilege of being a citizen and not having to worry about, visas. And so for me, the allure of corporate, I think, on a surface level was much lower. And then the third thing was I did an assessment of what differentiates me as a leader, as a researcher, as a designer, and looking at the market of other agencies. And I felt there was something unique in my expertise, in my knowledge. And so I wanted to take that risk and lean into it and see if there was marketability there. And then the last thing is I really loved my team, and I actually wanted to keep us together. I tried immediately after the layoff to pitch A16Z to hire our whole team. I mean, I was really very bold. And my team met every single week, and a few people were interested in joining me on this journey, and in the end, two people joined me a little bit later. So that was another motivation of like keeping us together and continuing to do the great work we were doing within Google, but outside of Google.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And even those, just those knowing that you were doing some of this in parallel, but those epiphanies that came up, right, including I'm a citizen, I can just go do this, and also that you loved your team and that you didn't want to be pigeonholed into this one thing. You wanted to kind of continue to do that. Something we both share, similarly, I left Autodesk on my own accord to start something, and it was very similar. I just wanted to learn, right? I love acronyms. I tell people all the time, I love going into new places because I love the acronyms. I want to know. I was doing a med tech strategic partnership thing at one point in time, and they kept saying PNB, and I was like, PNB. Hey, tell me more about this PNB thing. And they're like, oh yeah, it's called a peripheral nerve block. I'm like, you got to tell me what this thing is. Like, I gotta know, right? And who cares? I mean, we should care. And yeah, here you are, right? You are now have this clarity of, oh, I want to keep learning and expanding and not being pigeonholed into the corporate tech thing. Yeah, I think that's big. You know yourself, and it sounds like this is what your aim is in building velocity.
I love that acronym. I
Yeah,
love
I love for
acronyms.
acronyms. It's big. What are some of the things then, knowing that you wanted to kind of take that thing that you had at Area 120 and continue it in some way? What are some of the things you've now had to unlearn from the big tech thing now that you're running Velocity?
This is a great question. So in corporate, I invested 99% of my time or energy on impact, and to some degree felt like I could control it. There's in-house, you focus so much on the narrative of your work and the outcome. And sometimes that narrative is about your personal benefit. Sometimes it's about your organizational benefit. Sometimes it's political. And on the outside, you have to let go. You rarely see that end result because you don't have the environmental nuance. You don't spend your time, in understanding the organization and how decisions are made and how this, VP or SVP decides on, product launches or investments. So I think my energy, I had to unlearn how to care so much about the end outcome. Sometimes I still, in our team, still sees that impact, but sometimes we don't. So that's one thing. I also had to unlearn being an expert in our products and organizations, in embracing my ignorance. And I found a lot of value in that. If I go back to impact and I go back to actually earlier than impact, if I think about integrity of work, I find that as an agency, because you have that ignorance, you also have permission to scope better and to understand the context better and to help your clients articulate and define things in a crisp way, which when you're on the inside, there's this assumption we're all on the same page. Everybody knows why we're doing this. Everybody knows. And so a lot of that ends up getting lost, and you end up having some really messy challenges later on. But when you're on the outside, you don't have the context, the history, the knowledge. And so you can truly be inquisitive and you can help people articulate things that they actually haven't had to. So I think that's one of the things I've had to unlearn that has been super powerful when I think about the quality of work that we do. And when I think about also our own process and efficiency.
Yeah. Makes total sense. And I really, really, that resonates with me. On one hand, it's the ignorance. On the other hand, it is the permission to go in and really get deep and ask deep, meaningful questions and even challenge, right? And it's permission to argue if needed. Here you are. You're in many respects, you're being hired to be a level setter, as much as anything. Whereas if they were going internally, there wouldn't be level setters because it's all hierarchical, irrespective of the organization, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a big one. Well, tell me then. Let's just go into velocity. What is velocity? Tell me. I mean, I've mentioned it. It's strategy and design and so forth. What is velocity? What do you guys do? What are some of the projects that you're proud of or that you can speak about anyways?
We help companies, big and small, mostly big, I would say. We had a little bit of a product market fit miss, which we can talk about later. We help companies identify real problems. We help companies think about new markets. We help companies really understand their existing users. And we do it super collaboratively. And we do it pretty quickly, which is, it's velocity is speed, but with direction. So I think we're very nimble, and we really try to learn additively, which helps in making smaller decisions rather than big decisions. So it's some of the work we're proud of. Oh, what can I talk about? Let's see. I hadn't thought
And
about this
I don't think I even
suggestion.
wrote it as a question, but listen, this is a conversation, so I'll put it out.
Yeah,
If you
it's
can't
good.
say
It's not.
anything, that's okay too. Make
No,
it up.
you. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So we've done work like across industries. I think some of the work that's been most exciting to our team is the work that's more meaningful. So we've done work with a company that focuses on the hypertensive community in low-income areas, really thinking about how do you help people manage their condition and take action. And so for that work, we looked at the relationship between patients and their care team. We looked at really the relationship between patients and technology. And so that was definitely a project I think our team was like cared a lot about, was really excited about. We did some work for a VC studio, a lot of work for them. And one of the projects was looking at the deaf community and the hearing community, and how can we support communication in instances where there's vulnerability and there's something super critical. So somebody's coming, admitted to the hospital, and there isn't an interpreter. How can we help the staff communicate with this deaf person? Somebody is pulled over and by a policeman, and the policeman doesn't know sign language. How do they communicate with that person? Then we've done a lot of work for bigger companies, finance, advertising. Google has been a
Oh
big
yeah,
client of
that's great.
ours. And that's been super fun to continue working and work with a lot of new teams, honestly. But to continue working with Google has been a lot of fun. And then we've had some work with smaller startups, but we haven't found that product market fit. And I have some inklings on why. I think there's just it relates a little bit to AI. We can talk about it later, but it hasn't been a big source for us of work. The thing I'm most excited about that we've been doing is we've been doing independent research, and we're really starting to invest more in the topics that we're interested in, so that we can do a couple things. One is we can make our research available publicly, and so that we can also take a more open source community driven approach to research and bring more people into the design process of that
Yeah,
research.
that's great. I mean, it's also what I love about that is it's a certainly a tactic that you see from the big consulting agencies, which is research, right? And then you become a thought leader in that space, and really a leader in that space because you have the information, the data behind it. And here you are, sure, and let's bring you into this data, and not it's not something that you have to sell necessarily, right? It's bring you into the data, and you are also then becoming a thought leader in, with that data and the research you're doing.
We've been using it to go deeper in domains that either we're interested in or we think there's gaps in the existing research out there. So it's been a really nice way to continue learning on our own accord and by sort of objectives.
Makes total sense. You were in this parallel path, and you started Velocity Ave, and it sounds like you really are starting, if you've not haven't already, found your product market fit, mostly with bigger organizations, including your former employer. And you speak about velocity as well, right? Which is, speed at a vector, in a direction. Really, what in what you're doing then is fundamentally different? Maybe it's the speed, but how is that different? What's fundamentally different then in your approach than perhaps what you've done before, or than what others are doing?
I think what's different, and I mean, I don't know how different, you only know what you know. I think we try to really lean into assumptions, and we try to understand the client and the market holistically before we go in and do research and design. And we bring a lot of diversity from our team into that process. And so what that means is it's you're getting this, you're sort of huddling all these different experts. We lean on experts a lot, and it's not a one person show. And so you're looking at thing, at the space, at the problem from a multitude of angles and perspectives. And so it helps you go in with stronger operating assumptions and with more clarity on what you're trying to understand and learn. So I think it's how we work. We're truly, truly collaborative. Our team meets every single day. We share all of our work in progress. We talk about everybody's working on different projects, but we're talking about them all the time. We are bringing people in who have expertise. And so that it accelerates learning in a meaningful way. And it helps us push the boundaries of the initial objectives, and put it in context. The other thing that we do that you're not really allowed to do at a lot of big companies is we look at the market and we look at competitors if we're working on a specific product, and you can't you're not legally often allowed to do that if you're
Right.
in-house. So I think that helps. You know, when we talk about holistic, we're talking about the market, the business, the humans, right? And often when you're in-house, you're very your definition is much more narrow and sharper. So yeah, and so I think clients love that perspective, and it truly enables us to move faster. So, you know, we recently did some work around SMBs and their workflows. And, you know, we were able to do a really large study in 1 month because we didn't just have one person on it. We had multiple people on it collaborating who had, like, you know, expertise in multiple areas. And so that intersection really helped us accelerate the work and do it, you know, do it with integrity.
That 1 month is fast if you're identifying workflows across SMBs, irrespective of where those workflows exist. You mentioned AI before, and of course, this is also the thing that you were doing before at Google, and then subsequently were asked to leave because of AI or investments or reorg, whatever it was. How is that showing up in your work now, or your clients' work, or what they're asking for? Here you're researching in a month, and I'm like, well, is this something that I could just go to OpenAI, ChatGPT? Deep research and do? Where is it showing up? What's happening?
So we're playing along with AI. I think AI, I am not as threatened by AI. I think there's a lot in the community. There's a lot of concern. We are seeing certain founders, and this is one of the reasons why we struggle with smaller startups. We are seeing that AI is giving a lot of founders this limitless sense of empowerment. And we even had a founder come to us and propose that they would A/B test our work with AI. And we said no. I think AI is helpful in certain moments in the workflow. I think one of the things I've realized in thinking about and playing with AI is at the end of the day, what we do in design and research and content is really about making decisions. And humans will always have to make these decisions. And so I think AI is not, it is like businesses will always be run by humans. And so we have to evolve how we work. And we've had to evolve how we work for a really long time. I mean, there's been so much tension always between design and product. And so I think if anything, AI is pushing us and challenging us to evolve. But yeah, it's another tool. I don't think it's a threat in the way that a lot of people are worried. But I do have friends who have made claims that they are going to leave design specifically because of AI. They are going to go into, you know, into industries where humans are required. And so I see it definitely rating at a lot of people's sort of confidence in the need for us and for our skill sets. But I'm not as concerned.
Yeah, by the way, I agree with you. I follow a really great design leader, writer, Rachel Kobetz. She writes all the time about this stuff, and lately more about AI, right? And the role of design leaders, which is lean into it, right? Now is the time. And I think in it, paraphrasing what she said, and also, sort of, maybe it's a bit of smashing up what you just said with hers, conflating the two, is design is required. Designers design, right, for human experience, and vis-a-vis, we help to make those decisions, right? And that's what a designer does. And so it's I totally agree with you. Yeah, here.
I think it's hard. It's a hard topic to talk about because there's so much frantic energy right now, and so many people are predicting the death of design. But I think it's a time that we have to, it's what's happening is metamorphosis, and I think our work is more valuable than ever. Businesses have liability and accountability. And at the end of the day, this whole conversation always around like, well, who is owning product? Who is owning product? Design doesn't have a seat at the table. It's part of it is because of just how, like, the things we care about, and also how much time we spend doing those things. And so, if anything, leveraging AI in specific moments, in specific ways, will give us more time to lead, more time to sit at that table, more time to facilitate decisions, more time to advocate for humans. And so I really see it very, I'm in that camp of, I think it's time that we evolve, and this is the thing that is going to push us to redefine who we are within organizations and what our value is to organizations. So, I think there's a lot of people in that camp, but there's definitely still, when you log into LinkedIn, just like every day, you sort of get that sense of the doom and gloom and the fear. And fear is, our biggest enemy, and that's really what we need to, we need to approach and redesign our
Yeah,
role.
agreed. If you're a sci-fi follower, fear is the mind killer. So there you go.
There you go.
Existential, maybe not existential. Big question. What is design? What is design? What's your definition? What does design mean to you?
Okay, I think design, my definition might be a little bit different. Maybe not. I haven't, this is not, I haven't sort of read up on how other people are
Great, even
defining
better. Even
design
better.
in a long
I want Maya's definition of
time.
design.
Okay, so my definition of design is that it is about negotiating and balancing implications between humans, technology, business, and market. I think we are the ones who can really, yes, we identify problems. Yes, we make systems and experiences better. Yes, we create value for humans, all those things. Yes. But where our special sauce and our power really is in that negotiation and balance, and thinking about what does this mean for humans? What does this mean for the market? What does this mean for the business? How will this impact, each of those? And so it brings me back actually to CCA's, business models class, really thinking about desirability and feasibility and viability. Like, we are the ones who really can investigate, understand, and problem solve for all three of those things. And so, yeah, I think when we think only about one, like if we only think about humans, then we hurt ourselves. But if we're also thinking about the business, technology, and the market, then we're thinking in a way that is actionable, realistic, and holistic.
Yeah. By the way, even if you haven't read up or listened to others, that is pretty in sync with what I hear quite a bit. And also, you know, I believe it's this, yeah, it's the systems approach. It is not just human experience pushing buttons or whatever, you know, service design is in, it's the systems approach of what's before, what's during, what's after, and all of the things surrounding that. This is what I'm hearing from you anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and because we are so good at ideation and at, you know, considering multiple data points, I think the negotiating piece, you know, when you go into a room with a cross-functional group, who is the person typically who comes up with, you know, the solution, the idea that takes every perspective into account? It's design. It's always design. So like that, the power of negotiation and balance, I think, is really where we shine. And that is what business decisions are. Like, you know, you can never make the best business decision. You never can, because you lack resources, you lack time, you know, and there's always constraints. And so thinking about those constraints is really in our wheelhouse, and in that more than ever, I think is needed right now.
I think that's great. And also, you know, if you think about the core of design methods, it's also testing things, right? So it's no decision is a nuclear decision on off. It's every decision is a, this is a decision we're going to make now, and we may fail, we may succeed, and we will learn, and let's not make it a nuclear decision at that.
Yeah, totally. I agree with you there. I think there's still a lot of maturing that has to happen in understanding the value of iteration and understanding the fidelity of iteration. I think that's been one of our the things that has held us back the most, is this desire and also the ability for product to build things with high fidelity very quickly. And so I think we still have to work on how we measure iteration and iteration in testing mode rather than live, but a bit of a different conversation.
Yeah, and we have just a few more minutes. I just have a few more questions too.
I can go over a little bit too.
Okay,
if we need to.
Thank you. I don't want to keep you too long. What do you think then? You know, so now we've talked a little bit about the role design, the role of designers and design leaders. When you think out and this is in the systems approach, think out 5 years, if you can, where do you think design leaders, where are we spending our energy in the next 5 years, knowing the systems approach, perhaps what we're talking about, but also AI and even where the markets are going?
Yeah, I think it builds on what we were talking about before. I think we need to reinvent ourselves. I think two of the things I'm seeing that this might sound a little extreme, but we are going through an industrial revolution of sorts. That there's a lot of talk about. I also think we're going through a little bit of a renaissance. And so I think those two things happening at once, and I'm not seeing a lot of people talk about this, though maybe you are. And again, I'm not spending as much time right now because I'm so focused on the business and writing this book at sort of the community conversation. But I think there's actually a lot of tension between where tech is moving and the values of Gen Z and Alpha. They don't seem aligned. And so when I think about design and where we need to focus our energy in the next 5 years, it's really, really looking at technology and markets and helping founders and technologists and companies understand Gen Z and Gen Alpha, because I think there's a huge gap and there's a lot of tension, and it has major implications for businesses and products and services.
And I think Renaissance then is a perfect word for that, right? Meaning flourishing and not necessarily flourishing in the same direction, right? That's Renaissance.
So this is what's keeping me up at night right now, is sort of thinking about these two things, like, oh my gosh, if they're happening at once, like, have they, I'm sort of going down this, historical, like, rabbit hole of, like, what happens when these two things happen at once, and they're so, siloed from each other.
Are they siloed, or is there a Venn diagram where there's a thin sliver in the middle somewhere where we can, work together?
I'm sure there is.
Tell me about the book. I didn't know this going into this. Let's hear it.
Okay, so I'm co-authoring a book, and it's about design skills that make business
Oh,
impact.
yes.
And it's
Required.
yeah,
Yes.
it's
Required text. Here we are.
yeah. Yeah, it's like it's really exciting. It's going to be a super structured book. It really ha with two entry points. One is skills, and the other is impact. What kind of impact you want to make, and getting super defined about the types of impact that we as designers can make. And we're thinking about, design, research, content, and generalists as well.
Is it written for designers? Is it written for business leaders? Is it written for both?
It's written for both, but this is one of the challenges is figuring out how to write it well for both. And it's coming out in either end of December or early January with O'Reilly.
Oh, amazing. Amazing and great publisher to have something like this come out, under it. That's terrific.
Yeah, they've been really amazing. They're super supportive, and
It's fantastic. And the distribution is the key in that sort of thing. Oh, I'm so excited to hear that, and even more excited to read it. On that note, and I just have a couple more questions. We won't go too long. Here you are, you're writing a book, you've got thoughts about design and where design needs to go for leaders, and you're running this agency. I feel like what you're also saying, and I'm going to ask you this question in maybe in this way, why are or how are designers so well suited to become founders? Or maybe why not? But I feel like you're a great founder. You've created this really awesome organization, doing things seemingly that you love. What makes you and maybe other designers good at that or great at that?
I think we're good at failure.
Yeah,
First
sure.
thing to say is that we have thick skin, and we're used to failing. I think We think iteratively, we think additively, we think in a very defined way. That is really helpful when you're starting something because you have to prioritize and you have to decide what's most important in a moment and take an incremental approach. So I think those are the things that really make us stand out as founders. I think there are a lot of There's a lot of factors that determine a business's success. And, in Area 120, we would, we saw, I don't know, thousands of pitches probably over the time I was there. And you're looking at so many different factors, product market fit, the team, the business model, the competitive market. And so I think there it's hard to predict because there's so many factors and there's so many moving, elements. It's hard to predict whether a founder will be successful. And so you really have to define your own success, metrics. But I think if a designer is considering becoming a founder, there's a few things that I suggest. And one is it sounds simple, but I think it's hard today. Get real feedback from the people that you've worked with, and not just like general feedback, like on a project, but what do they think distinguishes your work? What do they think makes you different? And if they can't articulate something real, I think this is a signal that you need to focus more on developing as a designer, because there it is a very crowded market, and it's important that you stand out in some way and that you have clarity, right? And so the other thing I would do is look at the market of what you're interested in, whether it's starting an agency or whether it's building a product, and really understand that market and how are those companies positioning themselves? What are their unique differentiators? What are their value propositions? Who are their clients? Who are their customers? Who are their users? And then the other thing I would do is spend 1 month and map how you really spend your time
Oh,
in that month.
yes.
How do you spend your time? What are you doing? When do you feel inspired? When are you uninspired? What are your highs? What are your lows? What do you love doing? What do you dislike doing? I think when you're a founder, you can dislike things, but you still have to do them. And so, yes, you can outsource, but you're always going to be, involved. And so if there are things that you really don't want to do, it does, I think, make it challenging to go into the founder mode.
Yeah, makes total sense. And I've been there. And the fact that there are things that you're not going to want to do, but you still have to be involved. And kind of goes back to your part of your definition of design and designers making decisions. It's intentionally making decisions along the way, even when there are areas that you just can't be bothered with, but now you must be bothered with. Yeah. Thank you for that. Okay, one last fun question. What's giving you creative energy right now? You're writing this book, you're building your agency, you're working on clients. What gives you creative energy, creative juices?
That's a good question. What gives me creative energy? I do think
Okay,
traveling.
yes.
I think escaping and stepping outside of my day to day, it has been really helpful. I post Japan, post this trip, I've been writing about my observations from that trip and connecting those observations to each other. And that, I think it's really important in general to step outside of your sort of day-to-day and comfort zone, whether it means going somewhere different. Or another thing I've been doing is seeing a lot of live music again, which I did when I was, in my youth and when I was in the music world. And I hadn't been doing it because of the pandemic, and so this has become a new focus. So that's a way that I'm doing it sort of in my within my day-to-day, because traveling isn't all possible. But seeing music and seeing music that I love, but also seeing music that I like but don't love, and thinking about how musicians and artists are approaching technology and integrating technology. When we were in Japan, we went to 18 museums, and I think there's so much inspiration in seeing visual and sculpture, visual art like sculpture and installations, and multimedia art. And there's a lot of artists that are leveraging technology now more than ever. And so that's definitely been something I'm watching and thinking about, that sort of dialogue that's happening that has always happened, but it feels much more central right now. Like a lot of the painters that I follow who are, very like traditional painters are starting to use AI in their process and their workflow, which has been a huge surprise.
That's the AI as a material, right? That's the argument, which is not a tool, it's a material.
Material, exactly.
Beautiful. All right. Finally, where do people find you? How do they connect with you? And what's your ask of this audience or any audience?
Okay, my ask, I've been really frustrated with the content on LinkedIn. So either tell me where there's real conversation happening. So please reach out to me at velocityav.com if there's, a new place I should know about where there is inspiring conversation. If there isn't, please start posting real stuff on LinkedIn. I love your LinkedIn posts,
Thank you.
Justin. All your
Thank
posts.
you. Likewise.
And I'm not posting that much, but I try every once in a while. But so I'm a little bit of a hypocrite, but I know there are people that are regularly posting, or send me Substacks, like send me stuff to read, because I am trying to use my time better, and I think it does help to invest more time in newsletters than LinkedIn. So yeah, that would be my big ask, is help me find the real dialogue, and
Got it. Got it.
yeah, or
Or create
create
it, right? And
it.
it's let's not go to the dark web for this. We'll find it on the somewhere else. Okay. Yeah, cool. Well, there you heard it. It's velocityav.com and you can find Maya there and also on LinkedIn, which we'll send out. Thank you again for spending even more than an hour with me, Maya. It's always truly a pleasure speaking with you. And someday we're just going to hang
So
out.
fun.
I'll come out to New Mexico with my wife and it'd be cool.
Yes, bring your wife to
Cool.
spare
Thank
room.
you. All
Yeah, and you can
right.
stay
There
with
you have
us.
it. All right. Thank you so much, Maya. Bye.
Great. Bye, Justin.
Thanks for listening to Design Shift. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a quick rating or review. It really helps more designers like you find the show, and it helps me make better shows. And if you're not already subscribed to our awesome newsletter, head over to designshift.me. See you next time.